Welcome, Ecom Logistics Nation. Thank you for joining today's episode. We're on a mission to share e-commerce logistics insights, trends, successes, and challenges from the leaders and innovators in our space.
Any crisis moment or challenging moment is scary. Usually, it's more scarier in your mind than what it really could be in reality. And I think that's kind of one key point is don't freeze the fear or the challenge that comes your way.
Welcome to this episode of the Ecom Logistics Podcast. Ninad and I are really excited for today's guest and chat with Essa Al-Sahi, Chief Executive Officer of Volta Trucks. Essa joined Volta Trucks as Chairman of the Board of Directors in September of 2020 and took on the role as CEO in April of 2021. Essa joined Volta Trucks from Agility Logistics, where he spent 13 years as president and CEO. During that time, Agility grew from a one-country operation with 300 employees and 150 in revenue to a global freight and logistics business operating in over 100 countries, 18,000 employees, and $4 billion in revenue. Staggering growth. Essa, I literally get the chills just having those words roll out of my mouth, so can't wait to unpack that. In total, Essa has over 20 years of experience successfully leading and scaling logistic businesses. He has an MBA from Boston College, a bachelor in electrical engineering from Tufts University. Essa, we've been looking forward to this conversation. So without further ado, thank you for joining us. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Essa, for being on the show, my friend. I am actually super excited. You know, we had a prep call with Essa before and I was like, okay, trucking, electric trucking, what conversations are we going to have? Like, you know, how deep do we go? And right after that conversation, I'm just absolutely geeking out, right? I'm like, this is going to be so much fun. The depth, the knowledge that Essa brings to the table, the stuff that he has done, and the stuff that he's doing. We are truly privileged to have you on. Thank you very much, Essa.
Yeah, you know, I'm hearing you, but somehow it's starting to break up. I think I picked up the most important part. So I don't know if you guys are hearing me well, but I'm super excited to be on this podcast with you two and some of the great work you guys are doing, especially in terms of educating, engaging on this critical industry, as we've seen through both the pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, and as we speak today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us, Essa. And, you know, talking in that the opening piece, going over your background and you know, what you built at Agility, you know, a lot of our listeners of the podcast are in or come from the 3PL space. So, you know, what you accomplished at Agility is truly amazing and remarkable. So would like to start, if you could just walk us through that journey to open up the conversation, would be fantastic.
But I thought you said you had only 45 minutes for this podcast.
This is true.
I guess this will have to be the highlight.
Highlight. Right? Okay, fair enough. I get it. You know, I mean, I've been super lucky and privileged in my journey. As you pointed out, I started out as an electrical engineer, worked in the oil fields and building and rebuilding some of the oil centers in the Middle East. That led to a phase of continuing my education, upon which I joined a company called Agility Logistics in 98. At the time, when I joined, I was asked, what do you know about logistics? And I basically knew zero about logistics in 98, given my background in electrical engineering. And that's how we all start, I guess. But it goes to the philosophy that I've applied is give everything your best effort and things will work out. But in that journey, starting at Agility, as you pointed out, one country operation, small business, with big ambitions. Seeking to build and establish the 3PL market in the Middle East. And that journey led to an expansion throughout the Middle East, building distribution centers and a trucking network to connect those distribution centers. Ultimately, that developed into a strategy to grow beyond the Middle East, which led to a series of acquisitions, around 40 plus acquisitions, deploying capital worth $2 billion, and integrating that into one global operating platform. And ultimately, going through the world economic crisis that we saw in 98 and recovering from that and building up the business to what it was, a $4 billion business, 20,000 people, 100 country operation, which ultimately got sold to one of the big and exciting companies, DSV, for roughly around $4.8 billion. And I think I described the bookends of that journey, but obviously in between, there's lots of ups and downs, a lot of learning, a lot of mistakes. And I think kind of the experience you gain from that is what it takes to scale up a company, build a strong culture, build an aligned organization, and drive a great outcome that we ultimately realize as a business. But I would like to usually call that phase my once in a lifetime opportunity to have built and scaled a company like that at a time, as you know, our industry was transitioning from into more globalization, more technology, serving different industries. So I was at the right time in the right place, offering global supply chain solutions.
You know, Esa, well, one of the questions that it behooves us to ask you about is, you went from 98, you were in Agility until, you know, it was sold, but you got to the helm of that company in 2007, right before the economic crisis, right? The 2008 crisis. There is a lot of our listeners that are, you know, founders of startups or logistics organizations that are sitting today looking at, are we in the middle of another 2008 or are we at the beginning of it? No one can actually predict right now. But what's the advice on how did you get through it? And if you had all of these founders you were talking to, what would you tell leaders in the logistics executive space to say, how do you hold down the fort to get through whatever's to come or whatever's going on right now?
That's a great question, in particular because, you know, any crisis moment or challenging moment is scary. Usually it's more scarier in your mind than what it really is or could be in reality. And I think that's kind of one key point is don't freeze the fear or the challenge that comes your way, whether it's an economic crisis or in today's world, the various mini crises or major crises happening all at the same time. Second point is really you have to think about it in a way where, you know, when you don't freeze, you just got to take the right steps. And whatever steps you need to take or decide on, you usually have to go big in the steps that you need to take and not be afraid to, whether it's a cost reduction exercise or other steps, depending on the circumstance, the context you're operating, don't be afraid to go big and make those decisions. Kind of that's the second point. And the third point, I would say, and one of the part of the lessons that we, you know, I personally experienced is in these situations, you gotta get people aligned and communicate extensively amongst your stakeholders to ensure that people understand. They may not like some of the decisions you're going to be making, but you really have to communicate and not be afraid to communicate with empathy, and honesty. People, you know, there's a lot of adults in the room that you will understand if you're being transparent, honest, open about what decisions you need to be making.
Yeah, and really good words, because I'll tell you from my perspective, I get to lead an organization and those fears, right? Like I reflect back at 2008, and again, I was working as a business analyst for a company at that point, and I look back at it and go, okay, I remember the moments of crisis, but at the end of the day, here I sit, a better person, learned a lot from it, and we all got through it, right? So sometimes it's bigger in your mind, and I think the media circus actually makes it this thing that is always top of your mind, and you need to ignore and look at the fundamentals of the business and just execute upon it, right? It's in and not be afraid to make some tough decisions, but with empathy. I think that goes a really long way, really long way. And, you know, we are seeing that a lot of companies talk about empathy, but some of the decisions are not so empathetic, right? And there are companies that are doing it with class, right? Like if they need to do a mass layoff, they do it with class. They do it in a style that makes sense. And I think that's a really key point to take away, right? Like don't be afraid and be transparent.
Absolutely. Well said. And that you know, I keep some stories and anecdotes around that. Up until I took over as CEO, my role was, so I started out in sales and then moved into business development and then corporate development, which is kind of driving a lot of the M&A while still keeping a foot in the operations. And when the crisis hit, many of the things that we had to adjust the business or resize the business were things that I had built or had invested in or had pursued to extend our services in the business. So it was very painful. And I must admit, it took me a while to get there, and that's part of the lesson. But I had some great colleagues, mentors who helped me work through it. And in some cases, pushed me to consider some of these changes, you know, because as with any major change or activity, you never do it alone. Right? There's always people around you that help, support, give you input. And that was also something I probably need to recognize, that every step of the way, there's a lot of people that are part of this journey. And the success is not just mine, but a whole group of people involved and engaged and deserve the recognition in this journey, in the agility journey in particular.
And maybe maybe taking just a different twist on that. I know when we had our little pre-show chat, one of the notes I took away when we were talking about leadership and, you know, your focus and dedication to building a strong culture, to motivating and engaging your team, agility, full to truck, everywhere you've been. And the one line that you said was, you know, punch above your weight. And I think it'd be great if you could share with the audience what you mean by punch about your weight and how you go about doing it.
Yeah, that's a very important question for me because in every company or every industry, you know, there's pretty much everybody's doing the same in terms of what we were trying to do at Agility and Volta. You know, at Agility, we're building a global supply chain company with technology, with a network around the world, right? We weren't the only ones, and we were trying to compete with the big names, as you all know. And at Volta, we're building a commercial electric vehicle business, starting in Europe and then extending and expanding to North America and then beyond, serving the mid-duty segment, which is a lot of middle-mile, last-mile operation, e-commerce, consumer goods, is the kind of goods that we move in an urban setting. And there are competitors, both big and the smaller ones or startup ones who haven't yet succeeded. But if you think about all of us, more or less, you know, the what we're doing is more or less the same. The question then becomes, if we're all doing somewhat the same, how do you differentiate yourself? How do you distinguish yourself and differentiate yourself? And the question, it boils down to the how you go about doing it. So it's not only the what, which everybody's more or less doing the same, it's the how. And on the how is where the opportunity is to really punch above your weight. And these are the things that I'll use some words and then I could go deeper on that. It's driving alignment in the organization. How many times have you been part of a company or a business or associated with a business that the people are just, you know, the battle's not in the market, but the battle's internal. Terrible business to be a part of where the fight is internal, the politics and all that. There's an element that you're not punching above your weight. You're being dragged down by politics. Another way to beyond alignment is how do you create an empowered and an engaged workforce? So what does that mean? It's one of the things I always try to think deeply about. We want everybody in the organization, and find ways to make everybody in the organization feel empowered to make the right decision, not afraid to make the decision. And if they do make a mistake, they own up to the mistake and learn from it, right? So that's an empowerment opportunity. And I've seen many companies where top-down culture, where you try to drive a culture where people don't think for themselves. And I think that takes away empowerment. And maybe it works for some companies, but for the companies that I've been part of, have been leading and driving, you know, I want people who feel empowered and they're engaged, that they have purpose. They drive outcomes and they feel valued, and not only valued, that they have impact on the business. So this is the kind of culture and actions we like to build and create, this empowered, engaged. And that's where these are elements of allowing you to punch above your weight in any business, in any company.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, just proverbially speaking, punch above your weight, Volta, I mean, you're competing with Tesla to a certain degree. That's, there you go, my friend. I mean, you know, the the space has a lot of players, but your product, your solution, just doing our research, it just seems like it's ready to hit prime time. So super exciting to see what you guys are doing. It's lots to learn from you, and definitely that comes from leadership. Just to be able to have that idea and take it into action, and the amount of investment that goes into hardware to build that company, right? Like, it's just phenomenal. And the success that you guys are seeing and, you know, hopefully continue to see.
We are competing with the Daimler trucks of the world, Volvo, Renault, in terms of the big OEMs. But also there's a lot of smaller companies, startups that are out there. But if you think about it, in our segment, nobody has succeeded at scale yet. And this is why I feel very proud and excited about Volta, where we, over the past 2.5 years, have made a tremendous amount of progress towards coming to market. And there are 4 key areas. It gets to punching above our weight point. You know, if you look at our product development, we've tested, validated, and about to come out the whole vehicle certification. That's a key piece of activity in our business. Then leads us to the manufacturing, where we have our plant stood up and producing our pilot vehicles and getting ready for start of series production. And then it leads to our service network and charging infrastructure solutions that we put in place to ensure that our customers, in this case fleet customers, have a de-risked solution to transition from the internal combustion engine to a zero-emission electric ecosystem. And then finally, the lot of customer engagement we have. And prior to launching our series production, we've already secured firm agreements with key customers, lighthouse customers that are critical to, who are fully engaged and keen to transition. And we've been able to do that in 2.5 years, you know, in 2.5 years. And the question is, you know, what were the elements that allowed us to go faster, achieve all this progress in this short time frame? And it gets back to the same points that I was making earlier in terms of the people we bring on board have purpose. They all want to be part of a company that is driving impact. That's kind of an opportunity for people to join us. Second, as we bring on board, we drive a lot of alignment actions and activities and an onboarding process where it's about 4 to 6 weeks where people come in. We collectively work, you know, create cross-functional teams working on problems that really focus on driving impact immediately when they join the company. And there's no other opportunity like that where you come in and you're like immediately, there's a call to action for immediate support, right? And I think that's why it's such an exciting opportunity, because when we succeed, when we come to market, not only will we have a great business and a great culture, but we'll have impact. We'll have trucks that are zero emission in the market, reimagined, redesigned. I'm sitting here in a cab, in a Volta cab, where the cab itself is at pedestrian height. The visibility in this cab is tremendous, what I see around me. And that, imagine that in an urban setting. So this is why it's exciting. And this goes back to the point. At Agility, it was my first once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. At Volta, it's my second once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to having build and scale something like this.
My friend, many people don't get that opportunity even once in their life, right? So this is phenomenal work and you know, the opportunity that you have. And you know, a lot of people go through a lot of stuff, right? Like, you could be working in a lot of sectors in a leadership position. But, and again, nothing on your role at Agility, but this is truly defining the future of, you know, of sustainability, how we... This is impactful once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, right? Like, it truly, of course, at Agility, you moved a bunch of stuff, and that's amazing, right? But this is changing the world type of opportunity. So I don't know how you keep your ego in check, because I wouldn't be.
You know, always humble. You have to always be humble. But I would push back slightly. I mean, even in the supply chain, in the logistics business, it is life-changing for many people to be able to have certain products, certain food, vaccines, medical supplies, as we saw during the pandemic, how underrepresented and or least understood the role of supply chain in life, right, in everything that we do, and I think that's kind of the key point. What I'm very excited about is now I bring that supply chain and logistics understanding to building a truck that's going to serve the logistics industry in many ways, or the fleet managers, and create a healthier, safer, more sustainable environment for drivers and for the fleet operators. So it's an exciting transition. It's a different industry, but there's so much correlation and so much opportunities to take the fleet operator's understanding of what it takes to run a commercial fleet and bring that to the industry of the commercial vehicle manufacturing industry and be able to serve them with zero emission, healthy, safety features, the heart of it.
It's just an amazing mission. And I think just to tie it back, you know, for the audience too, like we talked about that amazing growth and journey you had at Agility over the course of over a decade. But if we just look back at 2022 for Volta, like it was also an extremely impressive year, you know, 200% growth in the team. I think you're near or just crossed over 700 employees. You know, an extension to your Series C funding, the first Volta Zero drives off the production line. You know, as you said, you know, punch above your weight. You know, you announced trucks as a service. You have all this going on in this short period of time. And I just bring it up because, you know, at Agility, there was a lot of M&A. There was, you know, 13 years. We're talking about the last 12 months, how much you can accomplish and how much you have accomplished at Volta. So I think that's definitely worthy of bringing up. And then, you know, as I look at the calendar right now, we're at the end of January and your friends in France, you know, the government there, you know, basically said in Paris, you know, in 2024, they will be banning diesel engine trucks from the streets. And, you know, the most aggressive announcement in the world to date, but certainly, you know, I'm sure that's going to just keep cascading throughout Europe and you know, come over the ocean at some point as well. So how does someone prepare for that? Like, you know, when you joined the company, and I'm not sure, you know, how long ago that announcement to ban diesel in Paris was announced, but then all of a sudden now you have this, you know, this maybe new goal to drive towards, or you have this push to go faster. So what does the next, you know, 11 months look like as we kind of approach 2024?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. You know, this is why I'm very excited about Volta. There are a tremendous amount of tailwinds here in Europe. You mentioned one of many. Paris intends to ban diesel vehicles in 2024, or maybe they, you know, kind of slowly, gradually push it. In 2024, 2025, you have in Germany where subsidies for electric vehicles go up to 80% of the difference between the price of a diesel engine versus an electric vehicle. You have in London itself, there are low emission zones and ultra low emission zones, which means that any non-sustainable or zero emission vehicle has to pay up to 20.
I'm curious how you see that cascading globally as well. It seems like Europe is going to be the early adopters, but how fast until other parts of the world kind of adopt the same type of stance?
So is there a difference between commercial goals and like passenger goals? Because I see like 2030, 2040 as goals for all passenger cars for like all kind of leading nations in the world, right? For transition and again, moving targets. But you know, commercial goals are not as visible, and I would assume that the commercial goals are earlier than actually the passenger goals, right?
Yeah, passenger targets for reducing or eliminating diesel or internal combustion engine in passenger is much prominent. On the commercial vehicle side, there's a move to, it's more at the city and state level and country level, but there are now EU regulation being discussed to ban across Europe the diesel vehicle, commercial vehicles, either in 2030 or 2035. I mean, that's kind of the discussion that's going on. But at the city level, and to the point, I think, Dan, you asked the question, Paris intends to ban diesel vehicle 24, maybe moves to 25, but it's coming. In London, they have low emission zones and ultra low emission zones, which, you know, which means that if you don't have a zero emission vehicle, you have to pay up to $20+ a truck a day. In Germany, the government will subsidize up to 80% of the difference of a price between a diesel engine and the price of an electric commercial vehicle. And it's spreading across the cities and the countries in Europe, while the European regulation is coming. Then you saw what the Inflation Reduction Act come in and try to incentivize much more zero emission vehicles across the United States. And that's a tremendous amount of tailwinds. And all of that has led us to drive a strategy of what we call, you know, the speed and scale of our strategy, because we do believe a land grab moment to come to market at scale, where so far none of our competitors have either the incentive or the interest or have been able to build their business at scale for electric vehicles. And the use case that we're solving for is an urban distribution solution, which is in logistics, a return to base or return to depot, where you kind of charge overnight, you load in the morning, you do your rounds and come back to base. And then sit in the city of Paris, where I am today, typically a 40, 50, 60 kilometer route that they take with 20, 30, 40 stops a day. So that's kind of the solution we're focused on. And what that means is that the charging solution is a charging solution at the depot. It means that the driver does his or her round and comes back and plugs the truck into the charging unit at the warehouse. So it's an ideal use case, prime for transition, with significant impact on health and safety of the driver and the pedestrians around a truck in an urban city, and a sustainable solution. So it's quite exciting, fun journey in building, scaling up a team, an organization, to address a market opportunity that is here and now. So that's why I'm sitting in this cab enjoying this conversation, talking to you.
Exactly. And by the sounds of it, right? So we kind of went down the path of like the national regulation. But it seems like the local rules and regulations are going to hit the market way before the national mandates and whatnot that come into play. And your solution is, you know, it's more from an urban standpoint. It's not, at this point, at least, you know, long-haul trucking type of solution, right? So it's just more logical to, like, look at that and where's the opportunity. And then we talk a lot about, you know, European markets, but how do you see North America play out between U.S. and Canada? And, like, where do you see opportunities? I'm sure you're observing. Of course, your plans on entering the market are a little farther out. How do you see the regulatory kind of bodies acting, municipal bodies acting to make these changes? New York, Toronto, Atlanta, LA.
North American market is a big market. It's arguably bigger than the European market. However, the European market will probably scale up faster given the tailwinds that we talked about, the regulatory environment, the city bans and the low emission zones and all that. But the North American market is absolutely critical. And you have states like California, very aggressive with their mandates and their rules and regulations to foster and incentivize this transition. And what California, you know, given California, the size of the economy in California, it kind of drives a lot of trends in the U.S. and beyond. So to that extent, California is very important, New York, other major cities. But even in states like Texas, where you can, you know, from a cost perspective, a total cost of ownership, where electricity rates are quite competitive, it makes it very power generation around the use case very compelling for an electric vehicle, an electric fleet. So the U.S. is very important for us, but as part of our strategy and ensuring success or de-risking our strategy, we kind of want to focus on, you know, building the business, establishing our footprint, upon which then we can extend and expand beyond that. We don't want to open up too many fronts at the same time in the beginning. That's part of what I learned at Agility, is kind of a strategy to focus, succeed, and build from there. Otherwise, you open up too many fronts.
Absolutely. And you need patience for that. Really good point. Maybe another follow-up question to that one, right, is, of course, we keep talking about replacement, right? So there is the replacement of the current diesel, petrol, gasoline, kerosene, whatever it is, right? Like that's running. We want to replace. But then there is, as far as urban distribution is concerned, the growth of e-commerce, the growth of rapid grocery delivery, right? Like things that didn't exist, markets that didn't exist about, I would say, even 5 years ago. Of course, there was, but like not at the scale that we are seeing. And every number that you see, we are looking at double-digit growths on each front on that side. Like, what do you see from a strategy standpoint where, yes, there is replacement numbers, but what's kind of the growth trajectory projection? Like, what's your thought about the e-commerce segment? And yeah, just a general open dialogue on the growth.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this is why there's a lot of threads to connect there, or dots to connect, that, as you point out. E-commerce, there's several big trends. Urbanization, growing. E-commerce and the service level you get with e-commerce today is phenomenal. all of those trends are leading to more traffic in a city, more activity in a city. And if cities don't think of how to kind of drive a more sustainable environment, not just from an emission perspective, but from a safety perspective, from a congestion perspective, from a noise perspective, you know, things could get out of hand. And this is kind of the business model for Volta, is to, you know, support or help solve for some of these negative consequences of growth in e-commerce, growth in urbanization in all these major cities. And this is why having a zero emission, sustainable, safe truck that the Volta creates a much more healthier environment for the city. And there are some of the statistics in cities like London. Commercial vehicles represent 4% of traffic today, but around a little under 80% of fatal cycling accidents and about 26-27% of fatal pedestrian accidents in a city, which is a phenomenal or an incredible statistic, unfortunate statistic. And it's mainly driven by poor visibility of the truck, of the driver that they have in driving in an urban setting. And guess why they have poor visibility? Because they have to sit atop a diesel engine with small windows around it. So the enemy of the Volta Zero, the Volta truck's story, is the diesel engine and the design of the current vehicle. And we're changing both of those.
Absolutely. And I guess more sensors, more visibility. You know, we during our prep call, we spoke about that using that technical product management principles to create a solution that's a platform that you can update, you can force down features into the system, right? As long as the hardware is ready for the future, the features can come after, right? Like, and you can build on that platform. So I get giddy about stuff like that, right? Like that, the features that you see in a Tesla, your ability to have those in a truck, to be able to see always active monitoring around you, right? And the truck actually taking a step for the safety.
100%. 100%. And you're hitting on all the key features of an electric vehicle like the Volta Zero in particular. So it's quite exciting.
That's awesome. And I have to ask a non-technical question, but just something, you know, in doing a little research and watching a couple of videos on YouTube, you know, obviously based off of where you live or what part of the world you're in, the steering wheel is either on the right or the left. I've seen with Volta truck it being right in the center on maybe some of the prototypes or models. So is that something we're going to see pushed out to market, or?
No, it's part of our focus strategy. The driver sits in the middle of the truck. And why is that important? Because they will only have to exit, and they can exit on both sides of the vehicle. Therefore, they're only exiting on a curbside, never on the roadside of the vehicle. And if you see the door, it slides back and forth as opposed to opening outward. So it's another safety feature embedded in the design of the truck. So it allows us to go to all markets without having to think about configuration for the different markets.
But aren't markets mandating left-hand drive or right-hand drive? Like, isn't that like more regulatory, or we have just been used to designing it that way and there is no actual regulation? You can drive left or right, it doesn't really matter.
Well, no, you can drive, I mean, you can design a vehicle with a center-seated driver. The market, there's no. We've been able to certify and validate that in the UK and across Europe. No, it's amazing. It's a fun fact, and again, it's pushing the envelope to how things are being made or thought about today, and we're reimagining and redesigning and rethinking what it takes to have a safe, sustainable urban trucking solution.
Absolutely, maybe just to some of our listeners, right, that are fleet owners today and they are on internal combustion engines or they are on diesel engines and haven't started thinking about, or they are thinking about, the challenges of transitioning to an electric fleet, right? So, like, what do you tell these guys that just drop you a note and say, okay, I'm thinking about it, can you explain how do I even go about doing this, right? Like, where do I start? So if you were talking to a business owner that's got, let's say, 10 trucks, 50 trucks, where do they start? How do they transition?
That's a fantastic question. Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. There's two things. First, it starts with the product itself. Does the product meet my requirement specification, which in our case, it not only meets, it exceeds their expectation in terms of range, in terms of safety, in terms of design, the cab, You know, you can actually stand in the cab without having to, you can actually stand in the cab in a very airy, roomy cab. But that's not enough. What you need to your question, and that is what we offer, is what we call truck as a service. And here there are like seven elements that are absolutely essential for a fleet manager to think through as they transition to a zero emission fleet. So what are they? Starts with, how am I going to maintain and service the truck? Because the truck is electric, they're not used to that. So they have to think about that. But the beauty of an electric vehicle, the cost of maintaining and the parts that you need to maintain, operate, are much less. Because there's no diesel engine, no vibration, not much gas or diesel or oils to deal with. So that's kind of one factor. So we provide those services, the maintaining and serviceability of a truck. The second is, which is what's being scaled up around the world, is the charging infrastructure associated with running an electric fleet. What we take for granted in a gas or diesel truck is the fact that you can have a gas station and fill it up. Whereas with an electric truck, you have to think about how do I solve for charging? In our use case, it is a charging at the depot. So all you have to do is install charging infrastructure, which in many cases, warehouses have electric forklifts. So you think the charging infrastructure necessary is a minor upgrade as opposed to a major upgrade in a warehouse. So that's the second part. And then after that, those are the two fundamental which we offer to de-risk the customer's transition. Then it's all about what the potential is. And given that it's an electric vehicle, the amount of data we generate, and therefore the services that we can offer our clients, not by our solutions, but having the fleet management solutions on the truck accessible to them, to their drivers, embedded in all the panels that we have here, it makes it a much more enjoyable experience and cost-effective experience for the fleet managers, the drivers. So, and that's what we're solving for. It's the truck and the services that they need to transition, in essence, de-risking it for them completely.
Amazing. I mean, you know, all those points that you just made, right? Like the maintenance side of things. I was reading somewhere like the core components of an electric car, I don't know about a truck, but it was like 13 parts, right? Like that's all it takes versus like an internal combustion engine of like all the things that go into it. The only risk that I keep hearing from an ownership standpoint is the battery, right? Like when that goes, it's the big expense, right? And I'm guessing when you say trucking as a service, it's more like a leasing option, or as long as you have it, then the battery is kind of covered underneath it as well?
Exactly right. So they don't have to worry. Battery technology has evolved tremendously, backed up by warranty and a service model that then, again, de-risks it for our customers. They don't have to worry about that risk. So that's kind of the beauty of our use case and our solution.
And so then the next one you said was the charging infrastructure. Is that now proprietary? Is there standardization going on that front? Like, what's happening there?
No, it's there's a lot of standardization. You know, we partnered with a company called Siemens, where we have a little small company. Where with Siemens, we offer together what is called a depot co solution, where we provide the hardware, the software, and the serviceability of the charging infrastructure in all of the warehouses or the depots they have where they operate their fleet. So again, de-risking it for them. Our truck, it doesn't matter what charging hardware you have. You can take a Siemens hardware or ABB or otherwise. It doesn't really matter. There's a lot of standardization out there. It works. I mean, and that's the opportunity. But what hasn't been done is a solution at scale, which is what we're going to be offering.
Exactly. And the last point you made was data, right? And that's the part that I find super exciting personally is, you know, when that equipment, right? Like, because most of what we have seen up until now is there is a truck mount solution that is, you know, running a Zebra terminal inside in there using LTE or 5G or something that's communicating through a software that does not really communicate with the truck other than the GPS information that might be mounted on the hardware. Now we are starting to talk about where the truck itself starts becoming that device that gives you the information in real time. And you mentioned fleet management service. So is that something that Volta's developing, or is it more an app-enabled ecosystem? Do you see yourself like allowing others to come in and play in your platform?
It's an app-enabled ecosystem because we know fleet operators are used to their own fleet management. So that's kind of the basic aspects of it. So we want to make it easy for for our fleet customers, for our customers who own trucks, to transition, maintain their fleet services, fleet management services or solutions is the goal. And the infrastructure we built around the truck in terms of the hardware, the software, and the connectivity to the cloud, to which they can monitor, track, and see the vehicle and interact with the vehicle.
I am excited. I'll just say I'm excited to see the growth journey from here. I'll be following very closely, and expect some messages from you as you go down this journey. So yeah,
super. I look forward to having you drive a truck and experience it firsthand.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Listen, Essa, echo Ninad's comments there. We couldn't be more grateful and appreciative of you spending time with us today. Want to give you the opportunity just to share with our audience, you know, where can they learn more about VoltaTruck? Where do they follow you? What social platforms are the best to, again, keep tabs on the journey as you guys continue to evolve?
Thank you, Dan and Ninad, for this opportunity to have this conversation. I really enjoyed it. I really appreciate your authentic kind of deep passion and your curiosity that you guys embody. So I really do appreciate that. For us at Volta, we're enabling this transition to a zero emission, safe, sustainable ecosystem in urban transportation. They can go to our website, voltatrucks.com. I'm usually on LinkedIn, reasonably active, but these days very focused on the execution of the business. So, but typically on LinkedIn is where they can find me and track our progress and give us feedback along the way. We welcome it. We're never perfect, and we're always continuously striving to improve.
Thank you so much, Essa.
Thank you both.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to maximize your supply chain. Available on all major podcasting channels. Thank you for listening, and see you in the next episode.